Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, and welcome back to the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Carla Long, and today I'm interviewing a good friend of mine, Mike Hoffman. Now, I first met Mike, and I'm sure he doesn't remember this, when I was a sophomore at Graceland University during what we used to call a winter term. So it was about 3 weeks in January. You got to like maybe go somewhere and learn about something new. And we went to the temple and auditorium, and my class learned about youth ministries. And Mike, I'm so sorry, but I'm going to tell everyone when that was. I was a sophomore at Graceland in like 1996. So in 1996, you were working at the temple, I think, and yes. I was a sophomore, and it was an awesome winter term. I remember that winter term, but I'm sorry to say, mostly I remember that we got to go to the top of the temple and the top of the auditorium.
Don't say that.
I won't tell anyone else.
Yeah, no, that's good.
But that's not all I learned. I promise I learned more than that. But Mike, thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the podcast. And I'm so excited that you're joining us today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So Mike is going to tell us all this stuff, but he is a campus minister at Graceland University in Lamoni, Iowa. And he is our resident expert on millennials and the church and, you know, just trying to figure out all these, this generation stuff that just really flummoxes some of us. So Mike, before we get started, why don't you tell us about yourself? Who are you? You know, where you've been, what you do for the church and for Graceland and all that stuff.
Absolutely. Well, it's good to be with you, Carla, and our listeners as well. I am the campus minister, and I also carry the title of Director of Religious Life at Graceland University. So it sounds really ominous, but there are multiple directors on the student life team, and I'm one of those directors that works with Dave Shaw, the vice president for student life and dean of students. So I'm on that team representing the religious side of things. Campus Ministries is this incredible partnership between Community of Christ and Graceland. So, and I'm in my third year, starting my third year or halfway through the fall semester of my third year or so. And I really have an incredible job. I work with a number of students. There are basically three student groups I'm assigned to specifically in my role. And then, of course, all other kinds of students that come into our ministry and our life here. So, but one of the things that I do also is that I'm considered the pastor of the on-campus congregation, Community of Christ congregation here at Graceland. So the three groups of students that I work with specifically, each house here at Graceland, we have a very unique housing system, and each house has a set of officers. And one of those officers on each house is a chaplain. And so I'm the advisor for the Council of House Chaplains, and there are 17 houses right now. So that means I have 17 students that I work with through that area. Then I also work with a number of students who, through student employment, act as specialists in campus ministries. So, for instance, every year we hire positions, and they do change from year to year a little bit, but we hire students who work planning Sunday morning worship, our Sunday evening or afterglow worship, and then a whole host of other things. Interfaith ministry, we hire somebody to coordinate the Safe Ride program, which is a program that offers rides back to campus on Friday and Saturday night in about a 10-mile radius around Lamoni. So all of those things. And then finally, the third group, which overlaps the other two to some degree, is also then something called Inspire, which some people would know as the Community of Christ Leadership Program. It's evolving because of scholarship money being ending or have ended. So we have students now that take a practicum with me once a month, and then we study about what it means to be a minister on campus and how ministry works and those kinds of things. So anyway, so that's the three groups of students I primarily work with.
Mike, that sounds awesome.
It is. It's really incredible. I work with an incredible group of students. We just finished homecoming last week, and a number of people came up to me and said what mature, involved, engaged students we have. And that's really true. I feel very blessed to be working with a group of students that are just incredible. So,
oh gosh. Well, I love hearing that. And I love hearing that, that you are their advisor, because You have inspired many, many people through the youth program and through other things that you've done for the church. So thank you for that introduction. You mentioned Inspire and the Community of Christ Leadership Program. That was actually getting started when I was a student there in the late 90s. Well, the Community of Christ Leadership Program was. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and why that's important?
Absolutely. So students come onto campus, and then what we try to do now, and it has evolved over the last couple of years because of the scholarship program going away, but now what we do is engage students in a 0 to 1 credit hour practicum, which meets on Tuesday nights, and we have about 15 or 16 students in that, basically a class, if you will. And then what they do in that practicum is that they commit to doing ministry on campus in some way, shape, or form, and we try to be very creative about it. And though we still have some funds available, so we also provide some sort of text each semester that we study and talk about together in a sort of a seminar type of class or conversation. And students actually see what they're doing as ministry through this lens of the whatever chapter we're reading at the time. So it's really a great opportunity. And we've had some incredible experiences with those. And students being very creative in the way they understand missional ministry on campus. So that's the program. And they can do any number of things. And some of the books that we've been able to study so far, the first one we did was Joining God, Remaking Church, and Changing the World, The New Shape of the Church, The New Shape of the Church in Our Time by Alan Roxborough. And we've also done some work or studied a book called Receive, Embody, and Share the Invitation of Christ Peace by Ron Harmon. And currently, we're actually reading together Living the Questions, The Wisdom of Progressive Christianity by David M. Felton and Jeff Proctor Murphy. And that book has really been incredible because it's been paralleling some of the upper level classes that some of the students are taking. So it's just been really good. And next semester, we're going to study Fully Awake and Ready to Respond, which was the adult text, I think, last summer, edited by Janae Grover and Tammy Linda Lewis. So I'm really excited about next semester, too. So
that's sure. Sorry.
No.
You know, I love everything that you're talking about. All these books, these are incredibly important books because the shape of ministry is changing all the time. Just as fast as technology changes, that how we minister to people changes as well. And I love that you said that we minister to people in creative ways, because there's really not just one way to do it anymore. It's not just a Sunday morning activity like it has been for so many decades. It's an ongoing, everyday kind of ministry. So I love that you're kind of putting it out there and making it a much more open way of thinking about how to be a minister. That's really cool.
Thank you. Absolutely.
So since we're, I promised our listeners we're going to talk about millennials. I think that it's probably important to actually talk about who are the millennials and, you know, just tell us like maybe some characteristics about them when they were born, so on and so forth.
Absolutely. And a lot of this information, sort of the term millennials, comes from a book by William Strauss and Neil Howe called The Fourth Turning. And that's really pivotal in understanding different generations, because there's really these meta patterns, if you will, between generations. But going on to millennials, it's a generational cohort that was born between 1980 and the mid-2000s. And anytime we talk about generational cohorts, there's always sort of soft lines defining who they are. So the front side of this cohort is now in their early 30s. So really, many of them are just beginning careers. And in fact, we've been talking at Graceland and the Student Life team that actually we're getting ready for the next generation, typically called Gen Z or Generation Z, coming in right after this. So in the next year or two, we'll be re-looking at some of these things. But right now, in terms of the church and the graduates coming out of Graceland, they really are sort of lodged in this millennial generation. Of course, another thing about understanding generational cohorts is that these are the broader pictures. You know, every individual and groups of people are different. So it's important not to just label everybody in the millennial generation a certain way or a certain type. But a lot of it is that they've experienced much of the same things and witnessed the same things in national and world news and those kinds of things. So it's really It's easy enough to understand why there are similarities in these cohorts. So, but having said that, one of the big things about the millennials is that during their really formative years, they were had access to the internet and all kinds of electronic devices. So that's really been very much shaping who they are. And they've come to sort of come to age during, including coming to college, in a difficult time in our economy. The oldest millennials were just 27 years old when the recession began in December 2007. Unemployment surged at that point, so many millennials coming out of universities and colleges really struggled to find employment. In fact, made some decisions like living with their parents, going on to grad school, and doing those kinds of things. And I know that there's, you know, a couple of different ways to look at this generation. One is in a more of a negative thing, but I think the real positive news is that they made the best decisions they could with some of the challenges going on for their generation. So I think that regardless of what their decisions were individually, as a whole, they could see this economic uncertainty, and it sort of shaped the way they, you know, considered their college career and then college life and then went into their career. So, you know, and it's likely to shape who they are for quite a while. So, millennials have been shaped, you know, a lot by technology, and I think that that's just sort of a thing that we're going to have to learn in the church as well and have impact. In fact, this millennials have a lot of parents who are also tech savvy, and sometimes those conversations go on like all day. And I don't know if our listeners have had this experience. I'm actually probably sort of a baby boomer myself, or I don't know what generation. I feel sometimes I'm on the cusp of a couple of them. But I know that my wife and my daughters stay in conversation all day long using technology. And it won't be, you know, consistent messages all the time, but it will be back and forth at given moments when they each have a break. So they'll stay in this dialogue about stuff all day long. And I really think that's part of this whole tech-savvy parent and adult-children relationship that's going on. So I think it's really important, again, the aspect of trying to figure out what technology looks like. In fact, there have been times when I've been frustrated here at Graceland. I this fall I've been teaching a class called Critical Thinking, and it's entering freshmen that are required to take it. And the interesting thing is I have students coming to class with just their cell phones. And so it threw me for a loop because I'm thinking, where's their paper? Where's their pencils? Where's their notebook? You know, and I'm old enough school here to think, well, are they really coming to class with just their cell phone? And then I read something about cell phones and remembered that the current cell phones have so much technology on them that it's more technology and more powerful than what NASA had to send the early Apollo missions to the moon.
You are kidding me. That's crazy.
So, you know, it's like, why would I even be questioning whether their cell phones are enough? It's really not on them. It's really on me, you know, to say, how am I going to adapt to this? Because they can do everything they probably need to. Now, I don't know how you take notes on a cell phone, you know, but I remember going to workshops a few years ago and taking my laptop and typing in notes as I was going. And I thought, okay, maybe this is what students do these days. So I sort of backed off the whole idea, like, you know, I would never have taken their phones away from them, but it did cross my mind, you know. It's like, well, should they put their phones down? And then I think, well, I'm hoping they're using the right reason. The challenge, I think, for this is that are they staying in connection with their family or friends, and are they not really paying attention to what's going on in the class and, you know, and engaging? So I think that's just a typical challenge for what we have to do and have to figure out. So I don't know the answers a lot to a lot of this, but I think it's just the idea of trying to figure out, okay, if this generation is adapting in this way, then how do any of us change what we understand and then adapt differently? So I think that's really important. So.
Oh gosh, I think so too. And I think that might also contribute to like some people looking at millennials in a negative light. It's like, well, they're always on their phones. They're never engaged, but maybe that's exactly what they are. They are engaged on their phone. So because even I was born in 1977, and I've been called an Xennial, which is like Generation X and a millennial, right in the middle of those two.
Yeah.
And it even annoys me. I'm like, put that phone down. But shoot, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Is there anything else about millennials that you want to tell us? Because this is fascinating to me. This is amazing.
Well, I think, you know, in terms of things related to just higher education, I think more millennials are going to have a college degree than any other generation of young adults. And I think that's just another thing that might impact the future of the church. They are going to be college educated, committed to higher education, and then how that shakes down in their careers and jobs, I don't know, but I think that it's an important thing to consider. But they're also, there's another side to that, and I'm beginning to see this at Graceland. Millennials are more likely to study social sciences or applied fields, and less about the general liberal arts, which Graceland really thrives in, but things like communication, criminal justice, library science are all things that are really sort of applied social sciences, and so I think that's really where students are going to be interested in, and that may affect in terms of when they graduate, what kind of positions or careers they have. So it's linked to those things. But I think another underlying influence of that is really because of what they've witnessed so far in the economy. They really want jobs that pay well or pay as much as possible, while also balancing this altruistic idea of they want to make a difference in the world. I think they want to make a difference, but I also think that they're always going to have like one foot in that security area saying, yes, I want to do great things, you know, in the world, but how do I also support my family, have a lifestyle that I want to live, and those kinds of things. So I think that that's going to be part of the challenge to do it. And the last thing that I have done some research on is sort of the impact of the Affordable Care Act on millennials. Now, you know, going into this time period, I think there's some unrest and chaos regarding this, but I think one of the things is that millennials are also really going to have better health care insurance options if we live out through the Affordable Care Act. Now, I realize that that's changing, but I think that's important. Millennials also are getting married later, and they're going on to graduate degrees, and all these, and women are attending college and attaining degrees in greater numbers in the past. So all these things, I think, have an impact on how the church moves forward in multiplicities of ways that we still have to figure out. So,
oh, it absolutely does. You know, I work in Salt Lake City, and one of the, pretty much the only way I keep in contact with seekers who are not really wanting to give me like their phone number maybe or their email address, that seems maybe too personal, is through Facebook. I talk to almost everyone through Facebook now, through Facebook Messenger. And like, I don't even know what I would do without that kind of technology. And I mean, I can't even imagine, you know, even 5, 7, 10 years ago, even that even being a thought in anyone's mind. I mean, so it does continue to change. One thing that I really appreciated that you were talking about was, I do think there's that struggle between, you know, do we choose, and when I say we, I guess I mean, I'm grouping myself in with millennials now. Do we choose jobs that live our life's purpose, or do we choose a job so that we can live our life's purpose on the weekends or whatever? And that really is a struggle. I didn't realize it was such a big struggle for millennials though.
Well, and I think to some degree it is, and I've already beginning to see that here at Graceland, for instance. I should say beginning because I'm new to Graceland, but we're relatively new. One of the things that we talk about in Inspire is the idea that there's this bivocational call that students are trying to sort of merge together in their life, whatever vocation they have, but also then this ministry or this, what in Community of Christ we would know as bivocational, to say, okay, yes, I'm a minister, but yes, I'm also an educator or whatever career they're pursuing, and how do those things merge together? And I think that's a really significant thing moving forward to understand, to say, yes, I need to have a career, I need to make a living, but I also feel this incredible sense of doing things with my life that are meaningful and purposeful. And so we see that happening in Inspire. And I also think that in higher education, that's going to be even more broadly expanded. I know at Graceland, we're already talking about figuring out ways that students, not necessarily Community of Christ students, but all students that come to Graceland might have an opportunity to look at sort of this discerning their call and purpose in life above and beyond just the career that they choose or the majors and educational programs. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, I really appreciate that about Graceland. You just don't go to Graceland and get one degree. Like, I was a math major. You don't go and get a math major and that's all you do. Like, it kind of like, and this might be a weird term, it spreads you out and opens you up and shows you all of these other ways. Like, I never thought I would study the New Testament and Old Testament. And now here I am a minister. I think because of those formative times whenever I was at Graceland. So I love that that happens there.
Yeah. And related to how millennials, I think, will relate to religion in the church, there's a couple of narratives. In fact, some friends I had lunch with today found this video on Facebook about millennials. And I won't share it with you, but it really talks about sort of negative images that older generations have about millennials. And I think that that can be partly understood as this idea that they have many privileges, that they're sort of self-focused and immature and afraid to make commitments. But I really think there's another narrative out there for millennials that suggests that due to economic challenges and uncertainties, millennials are really more self-reflective rather than self-absorbed. They're really spiritually attuned and unwilling to compromise on core values of including self-fulfillment. So I think that's really important. And while we know that generations after generations tend to think less about organized religion, and millennials have left, that really is reflective of that first narrative rather than the second. I think that the second narrative is really more true. Millennials have this insatiable soul searching. You know, they want to know the answers to bigger questions, or at least question, and are intrigued by the unseen and unscientific. But I think that really what that calls them into is this idea that there is more out there, and maybe it's just that we are not understanding the right questions, those of us that are older, to say maybe we have to rethink things. Maybe they're dissatisfied with the way we have defined things or categories that just made sense to us but doesn't make sense now. You know, for instance, it could be things like the way we even talk about church. Typically, my generation older think of church as buildings, and it's something you go to. And I remember this from several years ago. I had this conversation with somebody even older than, a little bit older than I was, and they just said, how do we get young adults back to church? And I thought about that, and I thought, I think that may be the wrong question. The question is that if the church is defined differently, then they are already the church, and we might have to go out to where they are rather than perceive it as something we all go to on Sunday morning. So I think just some of this has to do with just the dissatisfaction that the way we define things is not really fitting with future generations. So I think that that's maybe a different way to look at millennials and understand them in a different light. So.
Oh, wow. I mean, so I learned about this a while ago, actually. When I was working in Europe, we had this seminar, and Don Compierre was talking about how the church changes. And he said something that has really stuck with me. He said that the church, meaning capital C, I'm talking about all of Christianity, has changed in huge ways every 500 years. Yes. And it's not perfect. Like in the 300s, Constantine forced everyone to become Christian, and it kind of messed a lot of things up. Then we had the Crusades around the 1100s. Then we had Martin Luther banging up the 95 Theses on the door of the Castle Church in Wittenberg in 1517. And now we're 500 years later. And I mean, I think you're totally onto something. I think that the word church must be redefined. I mean, because, even people, I think my age, are not that interested in keeping buildings up, like, and making sure that the building stays in place. I mean, that's not what's important to us anymore. So what you're saying and asking the right questions is, I think, key to keeping this church going.
Yeah. You know, and one of the things that I've witnessed here at Graceland, I'm a product of leading congregations in mission. Before I came to Graceland, I went through most of the retreats, and then I had the opportunity to go to the last retreat that was part of leading congregations in mission after I came here, shortly after I came here. And that whole line of thinking about missional ministry and leading congregations in mission introduced me to things like spiritual practices and thinking that way. Well, I've in turn introduced that to especially the Inspire, but not only the Inspire students, and what I have found is that the room changes when you do that. So you get a group of students, they're cutting up, they come in, you know, and they know that you're going to have a serious conversation about the chapter that we've all read together. But when we turn our attention to a spiritual practice, like dwelling in the Word, suddenly they are so into it. That practice causes people to be quiet and reflective and then start sharing basically what they hear the Holy Spirit speaking to them. And I am amazed every time we do this. I mean, we do it frequently, but it's so uplifting to students, and some of them have told me on multiple occasions that is their favorite component of what we're doing, any spiritual practice that we introduce. So that's what I mean. I think it's like, okay, so, you know, maybe we just have to rethink what we're calling church, how we do church, where we do church, and all those things, and think about that it's got to be different in the future. And you know, to be honest with you, I can't redefine it. I think that maybe some of us who are in these positions where we're sort of bridges between older generations and younger generations have to just sort of say, okay, how can everybody work together to redefine what that might look like in the future. So I'm really excited about that, because I see that as part of my role here at Graceland, is to say, how do we make those connections? So,
oh, I think that is just key. And I love that you're doing that. And it warms my heart to hear that college students are into spiritual practices. I personally am into them as well. And, but sometimes I still have to force myself to do them, you know, but I always feel better after I do. But I just love that is already becoming, hopefully, a core of who they are. Yeah. And, you know, if you mentioned that millennials are more spiritually attuned and yet insatiable, right? And that is exactly what spiritual practices is all about. The yearning for more and being spiritually attuned. So that's really cool to hear.
Thank you. Yep. I'm really excited about it too. So it's just it's a good way to go.
Awesome. Yes. Okay. So gosh, so you've been there. You've been doing a lot of generational work, I think, most of your life. I'm pretty sure that's true, right? Like, you've looked at generational stuff a lot, right?
I did, especially when I was working at headquarters and I would be asked to do training in local jurisdictions and mission centers and those kinds of things, because it just made sense to me. You could see these patterns, especially when you were trying to provide ministry to young people. It just made sense to understand things differently, that we couldn't keep doing the things that we always had. And it rings true even today for a lot of different things. For instance, I can still talk to people of my generation, and I raise certain issues or certain events with them that I remember being pivotal in my life, and they go, oh, yeah, that makes so much sense. When I was 10, you know, I mentioned the moon landing before, but when I was 10, NASA landed on the moon. I mean, we had humans land on the moon. And that, I think, shaped part of my identity as a person. You know, I wasn't raised going to church or religious or spiritual in any way, shape, or form, but that created in me this hope for the future. So I think it's important to understand those important things in people's lives that shape them a certain way. And, you know, while everybody makes their own course or their own path in life, there are those things that sort of change the world in our lifetime. I mean, I think we could say that 9/11 has shaped some generations, you know, those kinds of things. So I think when we understand those patterns and see those things, then we can say, okay, this makes sense. I still think the changes in technology are just, we're just beginning to understand how that's going to impact people, like the way they read, the way they learn. And even, you know, for instance, the way we read scripture, I don't know about you, but, you know, I have all my scriptures on my Kindle now, you know? And so when I go into a congregation or speak on Sunday morning here at Graceland, you know, I will just open my Kindle and use the scriptures that way rather than, you know, carrying around books, if you will, that kind of thing. So,
oh, for sure. So. Yeah. So, so you've been at Graceland for 3 years now, and I, you know, you already know a lot about generations, and I think it takes a really special person, Mike, to be able to step back and be able to look at these generations and kind of like try and find some patterns. So I think it's really cool that you can do that. But what have even you learned in working with millennials and soon to be Generation Z at Graceland?
You know, I remember being a young adult in church and really having a fear of failure in church. Like, you know, I think my first sermon, I was probably in my early 20s, and it was like 3 minutes long or something, you know? And I mean, everybody was fine, but I felt like I had not done a good job. And I think one of the things that I've learned about Graceland and this sort of approach to ministry where we experiment with things is that it's completely okay to fail. We do not know what will work and what won't work. And so, you know, that's one of the things that we do, not only in Inspire, but even on Sunday mornings and things. If something doesn't work out just exactly right, it's okay. And I find university students really forgiving that way, you know, that they'll accept whatever thing isn't quite working. But I think that's an important concept and something I've really sort of learned because, you know, I'm a bit of a control freak. So there's times when I want everything to go just as I've planned it. And sometimes I just have to let go and let see where God takes things. And sometimes they don't work out exactly like I expect. And that's, I think that's got to be okay. So, yeah. So another thing I've really learned, and even though I like to think of myself as being creative, I'm not sure I really do it often enough. I think we have to think outside the box a lot. I think we have to figure out how to make whatever we call the message or the identity or of the church and of the gospel, we really need to make it very relevant in people's lives in each subsequent generation that comes after us. And that's a challenge. I mean, I think that, you know, a few weeks ago, one of the students spoke on Sunday morning. And they talked about Jesus being the foundation, the cornerstone. I think that was the theme from the lectionary that Sunday. And I wish I would have thought of this. He brought a giant Jenga set to the chapel here. And then I ended up being one of the volunteers to pull out the Jenga. And the idea was that Jesus is the foundation of those bottom blocks in the Jenga set. And what happens if you keep pulling things and doing things? Well, the whole tower fell over, but Jesus was still there as the foundation. So it was a great, great way of teaching. And it was very creative. It was just wonderful. So I think we've got to do more things like that that sort of take us out of our sort of normal way of thinking and being creative to share the message. So
that is a fantastic lesson right there. I mean, you know, you remember that lesson. You might not remember everything he said, but you remember that lesson. And that's what people do. They remember what they can participate in and what they can watch and what they can experience. One thing I think is really important in what you said is that we can't be afraid to experiment, right? Yeah. We can't be afraid, like keep trying whatever you think of to try and understand people. Like, and you also said we need to help the generation after us to understand. And if they don't understand in the same way that we understand, then we need to figure out ways that they can. So those experiments are really important and the failing is going to happen. I mean, how many of these experiments will work out? Like,
oh yeah.
Out of 10. I don't know.
And I mean, you know, in our own ministry, things don't work out exactly as you expect. I mean, so, you know, you keep making adjustments to it and saying, okay, how can I work on this? What's making it more relevant to students? At least that's my role here, is to say, okay, how can I do this? And I know that one of the things that is really important at Graceland is that there's really this idea about learning things and knowing things from our peers rather than from sort of experts or older people. It's not that I think students really, are fine with me speaking, but there's something about hearing a message of the gospel from people their own age. And I think that there's just something important about that. I know typically my message seems to go across better when I talk about my experiences in college or in young adulthood when I'm with young adults. And I think that's something that most older ministers and those of us in leadership roles just have to remember, that try to think back when you were that age and what things were you going through. And even though there's changes in generations, there's still a lot of commonality between people at given ages. I mean, we're all looking for connections, even though today we'd say those connections are more electronic, but we're looking for love and acceptance and connections, and those are all important things to try to convey when you're sharing with younger adults. So,
oh, I don't think that you can I don't think that you can underestimate the importance of story and experience in a sermon. I mean, every single person in a congregation like perks up when you say something like, well, let me tell you a story. Everybody loves to hear a story. Absolutely. Everyone. Doesn't matter if you're 5 or 95, everyone loves a story. And that's usually what they remember too.
Yeah.
So what are some of the assumptions that you had walking into this job that turned out to not be true? Like, what did you think that would happen and were really excited about maybe and just didn't go through at all?
Yeah. So I think some of the assumptions I came with had to do with connections about Community of Christ students. I did not go to Graceland as an undergrad. And so I didn't really know a lot about what the Graceland experience would be like. But I sort of came here assuming that Community of Christ students would know other Community of Christ students when I got here. While the Community of Christ students here at Graceland still make up about 25% of the student body, there's still this disconnect that they don't know for sure who else is Community of Christ. So we've looked at some ways of experimenting with that, like having events, even though they're always open to any student that's interested. We've had a couple of things that have been very sort of labeled as Community of Christ connections, that kind of thing. Especially that last year and this year, we started a Wednesday night program. For lack of a better title, we called it Chautauqua, which has its roots in late 19th century, early 20th century community gatherings. And so that's been designed to be more of a reflection on what it means to be Community of Christ at Graceland. And most recently, we had a student, one of the students in Inspire, decide to start a Liahona Student Fellowship on campus. And that's simply to give Community of Christ students additional opportunities of connecting with others in Community of Christ. Last year, Dave Shaw and I were visiting, he's the Dean of Students, and we were talking about, do Community of Christ students really know each other on campus? And with them not being a majority of students, we just didn't know. And then we saw a sort of an anonymous post on one of the social media outlets, and it said, how do I know who's Community of Christ? And so we really got to thinking about, okay, should we be more intentional about making and helping students make those connections? So that was one of the assumptions. Another assumption I had regarding students' attitudes towards college life. I really think I would have been a good fit with Graceland when I was here. I was just overzealous in my extracurricular activities at Missouri Western, where I went to school. And I've learned a lot about liberal arts while I've been here. Typically, students find multiple communities in which to engage at a liberal arts university, even more so than at like a state university. And I think one of the things that I sort of had the assumption that students were all good with that and that they could manage it well. And what I've discovered is that there is a high, I shouldn't say this like it's every student, but there are a lot of students with a lot of stress in college right now. And I after researching a little bit, I think it's more, I know it's more than just Graceland, but there's just a lot of stress going on in society in general, but then in particular, just the demands of academics, and then typically a lot of students are in sports or other activities, and then at Graceland you have the housing system that they're engaged in, and so there's this idea that there's just a lot going on, and they all want to, or not all of them, but many of them want to be engaged in multiple ways. But then I think it's also up to, especially campus ministries, to say, how do we help students sort of reduce that stress? What are ways that we can sort of help step that down and help students figure out those things to make life more, I would say more meaningful, but, you know, just in a different plane. I don't know if that makes sense, but just sort of a different way of looking at things.
Well, I can remember Graceland offers so many different activities that sounds so like so much fun. And as a freshman, I wasn't super involved, but you know, when you're a freshman, then you start signing up for things. And then I remember my sophomore year, I was just so overwhelmed. So I appreciate that you are thinking about those things and thinking through those things, because, you know, when you're out on your own for the first time away from your parents' house and you have total control over your life, yeah, sometimes that's a little bit overwhelming and it's a little bit hard. So I really love that they have someone like you that they can go to. Yeah. Anything else that you're thinking?
Well, there was another assumption that I sort of came here with, sort of thinking that, well, and we know, at least statistically across denominations, younger generations are not that into organized religion, if you will. The interesting thing is that may be tipping the other way. I know that a lot of millennials, and especially the generation coming after them, which for some hasn't even been labeled yet, but there is this tendency that a lot of them are used to going to church and engaging that way. And we've actually seen an uptick in attendance at Sunday morning and Sunday evening worship. Now, that may speak to the quality of worship, but it also, I get the feeling that sometimes it's just a sort of a really comforting thing for students who have grown up going to church, not just Community of Christ students, because we have a lot of students across the Christian community, wider Christian community, that come on Sunday morning and Sunday evening. But I think it's just this idea that it's something stable that they can go to and feel a degree of connections within that, not only connections with each other, but there, you know, with God as well. And so I just, it made me start thinking about all kinds of assumptions. You know, I studied some point in the past about the limits of congregational growth based on the size of the sanctuary. And so I started questioning, trying to find out, well, tell me about Cheville Chapel that sits at Graceland. You know, it was built in, I think, the late 60s or early 70s. And at that point, many, many more students attended worship than do now. And the truth is that I found out that Cheville Chapel was really built for small group worship and not really intended for Sunday morning worship, because when it was built, there were too many people attending Sunday morning worship that they couldn't have fit in Cheville Chapel. And so at some point, we made this assumption that we should have Sunday morning worship and Sunday evening worship in Cheville Chapel. But when I look around, it's almost full again. So the question I have is now, you know, what kind of relationship do students have to feeling like they're coming to worship and it's really a sanctuary full of people? And will that limit our growth into how many students might attend worship? So even though I'm not really into numbers, I'm just thinking sociologically or psychologically, you know, it's like, okay, where do we go from here? Do we need to start having worship services, you know, in larger facilities on campus? And you know, there could be a growing interest in that with students. So I think that also sort of falls under the assumptions and things I've learned about at Graceland. So just some additional.
What a fantastic problem to have.
Well, we're not quite there, but I you know, it's like, I'm just thinking about, like, I know that in other congregations I've been in, I've heard these statistics, like when your congregation get 70 to 80% full or even above that, people, attendance starts dropping off because it's not real comfortable to go to church. So I don't know if that's part of it, but yeah, it's like, so we're, you know, we already have like homecoming worship and baccalaureate, which is a worship service, you know, at commencement. We have those kinds of things in bigger facilities. And I don't know exactly how many students attend, but I think we need to look at that and try to figure out, okay, is that part of it? I mean, you know, when you have big gatherings, how does that work? Another assumption I had about worship has to do with this, our afterglow, Sunday night worship. It's been, we've had, the last few years, we've had some really incredible, very gifted student musicians engage with us. And one of the things that with it is that there is this very genuine sense, I'm trying to think of the word, but it's like a very real ministry that happens on Sunday night. And what's happened is that they take music that, for lack of a better word, I don't know exactly the music genres, but it's like pop music, but it's what we now call it is music with a message. It's not contemporary Christian music. A lot of that has messages that don't sort of fit with Community of Christ theology, but what's happened is we found music that has a deeper meaning, even though it might not, for many, relate specifically to the Christian message. We sort of make it fit to the Christian message as they play it, and it's become really important, I think, to meet the needs of students at Graceland. So I think that has maybe a future lesson for the church about what kinds of music and how we approach music, you know, keeping it very genuine and real and not not a performance-based type of thing. Even though the group here has been really, really high-quality music, I think the more important thing I've learned is that it's really important to keep it very relevant and very real, so...
Yeah, I may be overstepping here, but what you've made me think about is that maybe one thing about this generation is that they are really good at making those connections where they need to make those connections. Sometimes I think like with things like dwelling in the word, we get out of it what we need to get out of it in some ways, you know, what speaks the most to us. And I think that's the same thing with this music thing that you're talking about. We get out of it or they get out of it what they need to get out of it. And I just love that. I mean, I'm not a contemporary Christian music fan myself because sometimes I just shudder at some of the things that they say. I'm like, oh, that is hard to hear. Yes. But I am A-okay with finding a hidden message or a smaller message in a bigger song. I think that's really cool.
Yes.
Gosh, this has been so fascinating. Mike, thanks so much for sharing with us. So, can you talk more about maybe what surprised you about working with this group?
Yeah, so especially Graceland, when I think about millennials too, we want to think about generational differences and different things that shaped us, but I think there are just so many commonalities too that we have to hold that up. I guess it would be a surprise, but it's really more of a confirmation of something I just wasn't sure about, is the student support for a Community of Christ, identity, mission, message, and beliefs. You know, it's like, it's been very interesting here because many students, regardless of their faith affiliation, not just the Community of Christ students, find that those things that we share about Community of Christ just are really right on with where they perceive the world to be. And we've really had so many confirmations of that, you know, working with different students. One of the things about campus ministries, when we talk about interfaith and those kinds of things, and just in faith in general, you know, I joked a little bit about being director of religious life. We have a number of students of world religions here on campus, and we want to make sure that they feel safe and secure and just a part of it. And I think that that's been that we do not have to apologize. In fact, we can say very positive things about who Community of Christ is, and we get feedback from these other students and say, you guys are right on with where you are. And so I think that's been maybe a surprise, but I'm glad for it. You know, I think it's been really cool. But
But that's been one of the things that they've really sort of helped us understand, that we really, who we are today is really important and right on with students this age and what they're going through. So I think that's a very positive thing. Another surprise is how young students are. And I don't necessarily mean their chronological age. I mean, like, I think one young woman here at Graceland, I knew who she was. I knew some of her family after we visited a while. And I was thinking that I had at one time worked with her grandmother of several years ago. And as we got talking, she corrected me and she said, Mike, that wasn't my grandmother. That was my great grandmother. And
oh my goodness.
I realize, you know, sort of like a different perspective. I mean, you know, I really enjoy working with students and perceive them to be adults, but then I have to remember that I'm a little older than these college students. And even though I enjoy hanging out with them and working with them and doing ministry side by side with them, I have to remember, you know, exactly what generation this is. And so I think it was a really a sort of a surprise, maybe more of a slap in the face to me, sort of a wake up call to say, yeah, okay. You know, you think about yourself being still a certain age and a certain youthfulness to you, but in reality, you know, you've known some of these people and their families for a long time. And I think for me, that just adds to the endearment and cherishment of working here at Graceland. So, you know,
well,
I really,
she didn't start calling you great grandpa, did she?
No.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
I'm not that old, Carla. I'm not that old, but. No, and I did, you know, you realize that, like, that was when I started working for the church a long time ago, and you know, her great grandmother, I still want to say grandmother, her great grandmother was older and almost retirement. So it makes sense when you think about it, but all of a sudden you realize the generations go by pretty quick. So, but you know,
I
just feel very blessed to be here, because I think I've heard people talk about their Graceland experience, and while I don't know exactly what that's like at the undergraduate level, I do get to see and have a Graceland experience in my life. So I feel like this has been a really good assignment. I don't want to put that in the past tense yet, but this is a really good assignment, and I really enjoy being here and working with students. So,
well, I'm really glad you're there too. You know, I want to go back to something you talked about, the student support of Community Christ identity, mission, message, and beliefs. I actually think that people in Community of Christ, not just the students you work with, but people in Community of Christ, I don't think we give ourselves enough credit about how much work we have done theologically speaking and, you know, working on that IMMB. I don't think that we realize how impactful and meaningful that is to people outside the church. I remember I was riding in a car with Jim Mulholland, who wrote If Grace Is True and If God Is Love, those books, along with Philip Gully. And I was riding with Jim, and he said, you know, from an outsider perspective, looking into Community of Christ, you have no idea how amazing you are. And I don't think that we as Community of Christ give ourselves enough credit. And so I'm really glad to hear you mention that, because these kids had to learn this from somewhere, right?
Yes.
So we are doing something right. You know, we're trying to talk about the worth of all persons and all people are called, and how we as a people can abolish poverty and suffering on earth. Those are really good and important things, and our kids are picking them up. So we need to keep doing what we're doing, and also maybe be a little self-critical at how we're doing it and see if we need to change it up a little bit.
Right. Yeah, I agree. You know, and I do think that we don't sometimes give ourselves enough credit. And I think we have to balance that with humility too. But it's like, it's so interesting. Like Dr. Pat Draves just recently became, you know, president of Graceland University. And to hear her talk, and other leaders that have been brought on to Graceland since I've gotten here, the positive things they say about Community of Christ is just really a positive statement to me about who we are and how we are. And, you know, Graceland, not just campus ministries, but Graceland and the Community of Christ have this incredible partnership and relationship between the two. And I think that it's really good to have those outside perspectives
even though I wouldn't call Dr. Graves now outside because she's president now, but certainly sort of fresh eyes to look at us and say, you know what, you really are, you've got this message right now, you know, and we are in the right place and doing the right things at this point. So, and I just think that that's a really encouraging understanding of who we are and, you know, impacts students and the church in the future in just all kinds of ways, I think. So.
Oh, it absolutely does. Well, Mike, we've come to almost our closing time. I don't know if you wanted to talk a little bit about Generation Z or whatever people are calling it now. You don't have to if you don't want to, but if you know anything about that and you want to talk about that generation that's coming up, I'd love to hear about it. If not, is there any closing thoughts that you have?
Well, I don't know that we know a lot about Gen Z right yet, but we are beginning to study it a little bit here in Graceland because the front part of that generational cohort will be here or may already be here, you know, because there's always soft lines describing it. But I think, again, the thing I've sort of picked up on this is just like pay attention to your students, pay attention to the next generation and figure out, well, really, it's about keeping an open mind about how to define things, how to label things or not label them in some cases, and just be ready to go with wherever that generation needs you to go. I think that's important thing to consider when you think about church ministry and the future of our mission as Community of Christ with future generations. You know, I imagine sometime that you know, our church may look very different in the future. And I know that that can be really scary for some people, but I think the really good news is that I think it will live on in whatever form that it needs to take in the future and be really exciting and really make changes, change the world and really influence things in the future. It just may not look like what it looks like now. And for some of us who are older, you know, we just have to keep thinking, okay, this is what God intends. This is the way God is moving forward in the world. And just remember all those, especially you mentioned earlier, the 500-year changes. I think that, you know, we're on the cusp of some great things, and we just have to remember to keep an open mind about how it might look in the future. So,
well, I appreciate what you're doing, and I appreciate how you're helping to guide those students and facilitate learning and thinking about things in a new way. I'm so grateful for you, and I'm grateful that you were on this podcast with me.
I'm grateful that you're doing podcasts. I have to tell you, this is the first time I've ever done a podcast, so I've learned something new on how to do this. So thank you.
Hey, who knows? Maybe you're going to start your own podcast now.
Yeah, there we go. I'll have to talk to students about it and see if there's interest.
Oh, awesome. Well, thanks again, Mike, for being on the podcast with me, and I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Carla.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use. And while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.